Magic lamp? Wonder what happens when I rub it.
You have awakened me. I shall grant you 3 wishes.
My first wish is for economic development. My second wish is to save hours of travel time. And my third wish is to create safer roads.
You could have just wished for bus rapid transit and gotten all these things with one wish.
Make all your transit wishes come true. Learn more about bus rapid transit at indigo.net/bus-rapid-transit.
Hammer and Nigel.
Can you believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
My name is Nigel. Hammer is right over there. The body cam footage released of the officers who took down a 28-year-old transgender school shooter in Nashville. How would you describe this footage?
Intense.
I mean, it is. And the response was just massive and relentless. And it's. I don't know if it's necessarily hard to listen to, but you watch it, and it is the response was amazing to that school shooter.
The chief of the Nashville Police Department should be incredibly proud of his guys, because what they did in a short amount of time was perfect, especially coming off of what we saw with Uvalde, Texas.
And Parkland, who those police hesitated. It was the complete opposite here.
So we're going to play you a little bit of audio. And again, we put this out on our Twitter earlier today, at Hammer and Nigel, the full 6-minute body cam video of two police officers going in, Officer Michael Collazo and Officer Rex Engelbert. And this is just a small bit of the body cam video. We've taken the audio off of it. I just want you guys to hear how intense of a situation this was, and these heroes running into danger. And again, this is some pretty strong audio.
Shots fired, shots fired, shots fired, move. Right, right, right. Push with LPV up. Push with LPV up, go right. Reloading. Move, move. Watch out, watch out. Move. Stop moving. Stop moving. Watch left, watch left. Suspect down, suspect down. Hey, hold the air.
Wow. I'm speechless. I just wish, you know, I wish there would have been a school resource officer there that maybe could have acted just a little bit quicker. Taking nothing away from the Nashville police, their response, they got there in time. The school did well responding as well. You see at the beginning of this body cam footage, one of the staffers came out to like brief the police, gave them accurate and information that was useful. Somebody had already initiated the lockdown procedures. You heard the sirens going off in the background. I wonder why, if there could have been a school resource officer there, could there have been more lives have saved? I don't know. We don't know the answer. But taking nothing away from the Nashville police, the response was massive.
And they went door to door. There were multiple groups going in, multiple teams going door to door, securing each room. Then they heard the gunfire from upstairs. And the video and audio that we just played for you was embedded with one of the groups that ran upstairs. And what really breaks my heart, and I kind of get choked up even thinking about this, watching that video, and again, they've blurred out the deceased in this, but you see the officers running down the hallway. There is a deceased child in the hallway as these officers are running to eliminate the threat, the shooter. It's tough. It's a tough watch. It's an intense watch. But these officers in Nashville, their training was perfect. They did everything they were supposed to do. They did everything that did not happen in Uvalde, Texas, or down in Parkland. So congratulations to the training of these officers. I know that's some training they were hoping they would never use. But the embedded officers that fired the shots to eliminate the threat, Officer Michael Collazo, Officer Rex Engelbert, that's bravery. That's real hero work right there. So here's what we know. you know, 24 hours removed, here's where we're at. Police say the 28-year-old Nashville school shooter, and again, the policy on this show is we don't say the names of the horrible bastards. So we will say school shooter or suspect. The school shooter had a 28-year-old shooter had a manifesto and hand-drawn maps of the school with the detailed entry points at her residence. The shooter was a former student and was identifying as transgender, being born as a biological woman, but using he, him on social media. So the question now comes out, Nige, what, if anything, is in this manifesto that we can use to get some more information?
Yeah, there's no motive yet, as of yet, but I think they will eventually release that manifesto for sure. And we'll get a little peek into inside this dark mind, this dark, disturbed, messed up, mentally ill mind. We know this person was being treated for some sort of mental disorder. We know the police have interviewed her parent, her parents, and they believe, I believe, two out of the three guns were purchased legally, and they were hidden from her parents.
The victims included 3 9-year-old children, the school's top administrator, a substitute teacher, and a custodian. And looking at the timeline here, the surveillance footage, which came out late last night, shows that the shooter shot through a locked door at 10:13 a.m. So the door was locked at the school. The shooter was able to shoot through it and gain entry while armed with 2 rifles and a handgun, and then climbed the stairs to the second floor and opened fire. And the Nashville police officers, according to the timeline, entered the school and went to the sounds of gunfire, where the suspect was fatally shot at 10:27. So at 10:13, the shooter got into the school. At 10:27, the shooter was dead. So there's a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to, but the speculation has already began. This was somebody that was transgender, had been a student of this school in the past. Was this deranged individual ticked off at the teachings of this religious school? What happened with that? And if that's the case, let's just say that the manifesto, and again, we don't know this, but let's say there's something in that manifesto that says this person who had been seeking counseling was ready to take out frustrations on a religious school that had taught people that being gay was wrong or this or that. That should be considered a hate crime. Now, it won't be. Let's be honest. We know this in this country. It won't be. But to me, that's a textbook example of a hate crime.
So are you saying the issue of transgenderism, is that at play here? Should that be involved in this discussion at this point?
Or 100%. If you don't want to have that conversation, you're afraid of having conversations. Because I'm telling you, you look at the last couple school shooters, right? And I hate that there's a list of school shooters, first of all. But the Colorado Springs shooter, identified as non-binary. The Denver shooter, identified as trans. The Aberdeen shooter, identified as trans. The Nashville shooter, identified as trans. Once or twice, coincidence. But man, this is a trend. This is a big trend.
It certainly seems like it, for sure. The aggressive radicalization of wing of that movement, no question.
And I heard some people talking about this yesterday, that, well, the Tennessee legislature, they had just passed a bill banning puberty blockers and surgeries for children that want to transition. And maybe that was some sort of motivation here.
Yeah, you're going to see a push from far left leaning radical progressives to make the shooter into the victim.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
I'm sure at some point.
Absolutely. We saw that from the USA Today yesterday. The USA Today apologized on behalf of the deceased child murderer. They apologized because the Nashville Police Department got the gender wrong in the original press conference.
I do think they deleted that tweet, by the way.
They should have. And that's ridiculous.
You had some of the best times. You'll never
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show. Walter Hall.
So it's Brad Paisley headlining the Legends Day concert downtown Indy. That's the night before the race.
Right.
Right?
Now, it's no longer at the Motor Speedway. Right. This is at the White River Park. But Brad Paisley.
I mean, that's a big name. That's a big name. It's going to be a tough ticket to get. I'm looking forward to the Carb Day announcement as well. I don't know when we can expect that. When do they usually announce it? Do you know?
It's usually around this time. So whenever we get the inside scoop on Carb Day, we'll have to get Doug Bowles on the show.
I really missed out on Poison. Ugh,
it was so fun.
That one.
That was a blast.
And then Kid Rock 1 year for Carb Day. The last one I went to, because we're usually working on Carb Day, was I think I went to Skinner!
Freebird!
Yeah, I mean, how many times a drunk Nigel out there at Carb Day going, Freebird! Skinnered!
Last year, Guy Relford and I had a mandate at Carb Day last year.
Did you?
We went and watched the practice, the qualifying, and then we headed over to the concert stage, and it gets going late. So Morris Day and the Time had just gotten on. But then, like, this big, dark rain cloud moved in.
That's right.
And we thought, you know what? With all due respect to the Kings of Chaos, we're going to probably head to the exits here. Which was a smart move, because it just opened up shortly after that. But
Kings of the Chaos, that was like the hodgepodge of different high-profile rock stars in the same band.
Right. They had somebody from Guns N' Roses.
Matt
they had
Sorum.
Skid Row. Yeah. Lita Ford was there. And I was really wanting to hear Lita Ford yell, "Kiss me once! I got hairy legs!"
the
Joe
official,
Biden music.
Official Joe Biden music, sure.
But didn't quite make it that. So, yeah, looking forward to it. So we've talked on this program before about how there's a shortage of airline pilots.
Yes.
Pilots and folks that run the controls. Well, there's a lot of people that are in the short category here, including electricians. Story out today about how electricians, essential workers, are in short supply right now. And some people think it's because of Biden's transition to electric cars and energy, which is creating a demand for more electricians, thus creating a shortage for a lot of other people when they need them. I'm reading this report here. It says electricians, the essential workers in the transition to renewable energy movement, are in increasingly short supply. They are needed to install electric car chargers, heat pumps, gear deemed essential to address climate change. So if you're having like an electrical fire at your house, sorry, the guy's probably going to be unavailable because he's putting in stuff for Biden's electric cars.
By the way, those chargers aren't exactly reliable. If you live in an apartment complex, I mean, I was reading this Boston Globe article recently where these electric car chargers are not reliable. Sometimes they go offline for weeks and it's unpredictable pricing, especially some of these electric vehicle chargers, these charging stations charge by the minute, which could prove to be unpredictable depending on how long it takes to charge your battery.
And man, we just had the whole house redone, the whole electrical system done like last year. That is an exhausting process. That is not a cheap process.
No.
And if you are somebody that's not quite sure what you want to do in terms of a career, man, become an electrician, because you, one, will always be busy, and two, you will make a crap ton of money. I know this because I'm the dude that wrote the check.
Yeah, exactly. Hands-on trade schools are where people are making money right now. I'm writing a check for a driveway. I think you and I have similar checks we wrote recently. So,
dude, the Hammer House has been the money pit lately.
Yeah.
Remember that Tom Hanks movie where the bathtub falls through and he just sits there and laughs at it?
I love that movie. I watched it recently.
Between the electrical and the plumbing at Casa de Hammer, boy, you know, all that bonus money we earned for our ratings?
Nope.
Gone.
Well, our driveway, I mean, look, I know you, how your house is the old school, like 50s, 60s, right? Ours was built in 81, but it still had the original asphalt driveway, and it's literally crumbling. It's falling apart. We tried to have it resealed last summer, and the guy comes out. He's like, "I'm not resealing this. this is useless. There's no. It would do more damage to it if I tried to use the resealer on this thing." So, yeah, we're dropping a ton of money Hey, welcome to home ownership. I'm not complaining.
Right.
We live in the greatest country in the world, okay? I mean, but they are having problems in these kinds of industries. Like, we couldn't get on the schedule until June, I think.
He gave you the money pit excuse. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Right. 2 weeks.
Right.
Okay.
So when you do find it, yeah. I mean, same with plumbing. Heating and plumbing, B&W Plumbing, is the ones that my wife and I use. And Beth, the manager there, always talking about how they need more and will pay for schooling for
yes.
HVAC.
Right. Poor Allison's over here like, can I go just a couple days without hearing about plumbing and toilets? Because she produces the Home and Garden Show on the weekend.
That's right.
Like, normally this is her escape. You know, we're going to come in here and we're going to have drinks and we're going to have fun. We got lewd nude dudes in the news. And today we're talking piping. We're talking electricians. And poor Allison's over here going, oh my God.
And I just did a segment with Beth, so can't escape it.
I got this, and oh man, my wife keeps on me. I mean, every day we've got a leaky faucet in the bathroom downstairs. It's just drip, 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 and you have to turn the faucet just ever so slightly. And
then it'll
stop.
Right.
And then it'll stop, but she doesn't understand that. She doesn't want to take the time to do that. I go, well, we're going to have to replace the whole faucet then, if that's the case. So we need to get very talented and adept to just, whenever we use the downstairs guest bathroom, just to turn that faucet ever so slightly so it'll stop dripping.
So I have questions.
Yes?
What was lovely Lindsay's response when you looked at her and said, you're doing it wrong?
not a positive one.
You don't know how to turn the faucet off.
Yeah.
Okay. Next thing you know, we're buying a whole new faucet. I get it. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Man, did you see that staffer for Senator Rand Paul got stabbed in D.C. over the weekend? Just randomly.
What is it about Rand Paul and his staff that they're like targets for violence?
Yeah, Rand Paul. Look, it's becoming increasingly clear to me that it's a trend. The radical. I mean, you could go back as far as that radical Bernie supporter that worked on his campaign, shooting up the baseball field and the Republican game, that, you know, severely injuring Steve Scalise. Rand Paul was tackled by his neighbor and severely injured. Assassination attempt on Kavanaugh. Ted Cruz being chased out of a restaurant because of aggressive, belligerent protests.
Now, wait a minute.
And on and on.
Hold
and on.
I was told that was the peaceful, tolerant left, Nige.
Zeldin. Remember Lee Zeldin campaigning for governor of New York, attacked during his campaign. I mean, the list, there's certainly a long list, and I can go on.
Was it Dave Chappelle that was attacked on stage doing...
By a trans activist. Sure.
Man.
Yeah.
Rand Paul released a statement saying, quote, "This past weekend, a member of my staff was brutally attacked in broad daylight in Washington, D.C. I ask you to join me in praying for a speedy and complete recovery and thanking the first responders, hospital staff, and police for their diligent actions."
Did they get the guy?
Yes. The resident of D.C. was arrested and was charged with assault with intent to kill. Assault with intent to kill. So this is a serious charge here.
Of course, in D.C., you'll probably be right back out on the streets.
Oh, Muriel Bowser probably throw a parade. They'll build a statue of him, put it right up there next to Marion Barry's.
Can't get arrested for crack, smoking crack with a hooker in a hotel room. He's got a statue outside.
He won re-election.
Yeah, that's right.
Not only did he win re-election, he got a statue, too. My man Mitch, Mitch Daniels, former
Mitch.
Indiana governor, Purdue president, he's joined this Carmel-based group, Liberty Fund, where he's going to serve as a distinguished scholar and senior advisor.
Do you think at any point in your future, Hammer, for the rest of your life, you would ever serve as a distinguished scholar of anything?
No.
Would you?
No.
Senior advisor Jason Hammer here. He's also his distinguished scholar. So I guess that makes it official. Mitch Daniels not running for Senate.
Like, whenever I get in trouble,
governor.
or get arrested. The file photo they're going to use on the news is like the one in The Simpsons, where Homer's got like all the cigarettes, like 100 cigarettes in his mouth, or he's got a lampshade on his head.
You're going to be wearing your Who Farted t-shirt.
Riding a donkey backwards, knocking over a cake table. That's going to be the file photo that they use. Again, Mitch Daniels clearly stating, I think my political days are done. I mean, he's had some pretty sweet gigs since his days as a politician. Running Purdue, which, look, I make fun of Purdue because they get beat by a 16 seed that really shouldn't have even been in the tournament to begin with because they didn't win their conference tournament.
That's
but
so funny.
Academically, Purdue was a well-oiled machine, and Mitch Daniels did not raise tuition during his tenure there, which I thought was awesome. And now he goes from that to this sweet gig where you're a distinguished scholar. Again, I guess that means he can't be lighting any farts anytime soon, but good for Mitch Daniels.
I'll take it. Didn't we interview him the way when kids were going back to Purdue?
Yes.
And he had some pretty, you know, controversial. He didn't do the vax mandate at Purdue, did he? I can't remember.
No. I don't believe he did. If you went to Purdue,
masks.
Yeah, they did the mask thing. If you wanted to be virtual, I think you could, but they were opening things up.
Yes.
They were one of the first places in the Big Ten to say, hey, we're going to have people at football games, basketball games, even if it was limited attendance. I think once the Big Ten got the okay, Mitch Daniels was one of the first ones to say, all right, come on, let's go. Let's get this thing rolling. This is a crazy story from a university called Wayne State. Wayne State University English professor Stephen Shaviro has been suspended after he went on social media and called for, in essence, the murder of speakers on campus who have different political opinions than he does.
Of course. I mean, this guy's college professor saying this stuff openly on Twitter. Read what he said, man.
So it's a long post. It's a rambling long post. But the highlighted part, quote, I think it is far more admirable to kill a racist, homophobic, or transphobic speaker than it is to shut them down.
Okay. Disagree with the speaker, what they say, and what you perceive as racist or homophobic or transphobic. So, yeah, I'm okay with them killing them.
And sure. To the university's credit, they actually suspended this lunatic. Had this happened at Berkeley or Stanford, they probably would have gave this guy tenure. Gave him a raise, gave him tenure, you know, make sure that he's speaking on all the national news platforms.
Kill people you disagree with. Okay, yeah, sure, yeah. Here, sign this new contract. We're gonna make sure you stay here for a long time.
Hey, I hear Charlie Kirk's coming to a campus a couple, you know, hours away. Why don't you gather up some troops and go over there and make an ass of yourself? Because that's what we're all about. I mean, that's currently the way college works. These professors, they've gotten away with this for so long, but now they're social media. And either they don't know how to use it, or somebody else will catch them being an ass and post it on social media.
Now, he knew exactly what he was doing, and he believes every word of that. Make no mistake. He believes every word of what he said. Better to kill a transphobic, homophobic racist than to let them speak. Yeah, just kill them.
And I love it makes you one of those things, transphobic, homophobic. If you simply say, you know, I don't think second graders should have their penis cut off. Guys like this want you dead.
Yeah.
Wants you dead. Let that sink in for just a little bit. Think about that before you spend money to send your kids off to college. One more story relating to college. Some colleges are eliminating grades.
I'm sorry?
We have reached the participation trophy of the secondary education portion of the program. To help some students adapt, some colleges around the country have eliminated grades.
It's called ungrading. No. I'm not joking. I got the article. Ungrading.
So I'm reading it here. The idea is meant to ease the transition to higher education, especially for freshmen who are in their, you know, the first in their families to go to college. And maybe, God bless them, they just didn't do a whole lot when they were in high school. So we're going to ease them into the process with ungrading. Where was this when I was at Ball State?
No kidding.
Because I would have loved some good old-fashioned ungrading. Oh, Mr. Hammer showed up without a shirt on today and bar stamps all over his chest.
A plus.
We're going to have to give him an A plus because, well, he's a freshman and we're ungrading around here. In fact, one of the classes graduated yesterday.
Really?
Hammer and Nigel show. We have the exclusive audio of the ceremony.
Congratulations, graduates. Unimportant that some of you still can't spell congratulations. But it doesn't matter, because there are no grades, and there is no valedictorian. In fact, you're all valedictorians. So as you prepare to go out there into the real world, know that we haven't prepared you at all.
Yeah!
It's nothing like what you have experienced here at Snowflake College. You may now move the tassel to the other side of your mortarboard. I'm talking about your cap, the tassel on your cap, huh? Bunch of morons.
Exclusive audio from the ungrading class that graduated.
Wow. Snowflake College, I think, knocked Purdue out a year ago. The Hammer and Nigel Show.
Boy.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Oh, yeah!
The new survey, Hammer, of sports fanatics. The average super fan would trek 5 hours and 48 minutes to see a big game.
Okay.
45% say they've traveled out of the country for a game. So I ask you, the longest you've ever traveled for a game or maybe even a concert or something like that.
So this is twofold here. I drove to Florida for the Colts Super Bowls, but I was covering that and getting paid from my previous employer. So if you take that out of the equation, I've driven to Knoxville for a Tennessee Vols football game, but it wasn't like I drove there, watched the game, and came back. You know, you stay the night, you hit some restaurants, do some drinking, that type of thing. But yeah, I've totally driven multiple hours.
You just flew out to Vegas to see our buddy Eric play AAA ball for the Area 51s out there. Eric Riggs from Brownsburg. Traveled to Chicago. It's like mostly regional to see concerts. Like I remember late 90s traveling to Chicago to see Third Eye Blind. I did fly down to Tampa to see the Colts on Monday Night Football, but that was the Curtis Painter era.
Oh, that wasn't the amazing comeback?
No. No. I mean, like Garth in South Bend, Dave Matthews in Cincinnati.
I've got a St. Louis for Cubs and Cards.
Yeah. I mean, I lived in Texas. I saw a bunch of concerts in Texas when I lived there, so I guess that doesn't count as traveling. But yeah, the longest I've traveled is probably regionally for concerts and stuff like that. Sporting events, like I said, Vegas to see our buddy play AAA ball and stuff like that.
So let me kind of shrink it down here just a little bit.
St. Louis, all the Cincinnati for the Reds and Cards games.
What's the distance you've gone where you drove back the same day?
Because we did that.
I stayed the night in Knoxville and obviously stayed the weekend in Florida.
Yeah.
Probably Chicago for me.
Yeah, Chicago. When we went to see Third Eye, me and my buddy went to see Third Eye Blind and then at the Metro and then just drove back that night.
Yeah, that's about a three and a half hour trip. Go up to watch the Cubs play a few times.
Not worth it for Third Eye Blind. Loved their first CD, don't get me wrong, but certainly not worth it.
Allison?
I think I'm kind of with you guys. If I go too far out, I'm just going to stay the night and make a weekend of it. But I think Louisville maybe was a one night we turned around. But
for what?
I honestly don't remember.
Oh, you know what it was.
No, it was middle school, and I remember one of our moms were driving. So I'm going to take a stab in the dark. It's probably the Jonas Brothers or something along those lines.
Okay. Now, you got to remember, with this group, when you say, I went to a concert and I don't remember, we're just going to assume that you went there, drank about a fifth of Everclear, and then woke up the next day.
Because I was a middle school girl and I did not drive. A little different.
So Third Eye Blind was not worth the trip coming back?
Yeah, Stephen Jenkins' voice live is not what it was on the album. From what I remember, it was late 90s. It was okay. But I did like their first album, and I listened to it. You know, it was one of those through and through.
Semi-Charmed Life and How's It Gonna Be.
Yeah. I would travel. I would love to go to a World Cup game.
Yeah.
I would definitely travel out of the country. for a World Cup game.
If the funds existed, would you go watch the Colts play in one of those London games?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they went a couple years ago against Jacksonville, and I think they got shut out and didn't score.
If the funds weren't an issue, family responsibilities, wife, young kids, I'd be going to something every month. Like, I'd go to, you know, let's see, I'd start with Daytona 500 in February. I always wanted to go to one of those. March, I'd do March Madness. April, I'd do the Masters. May, maybe stick around here for the Indy 500.
That'd be cool.
Go to all four major golf tournaments for sure. Like, I call it the dream year, where you're doing something every month. Maybe going to a World Series game in October. I would love to do something like that one year.
I think our pal Don Stuck has visited every major league ballpark. I know he was trying to, and he's accomplished that. Once I get old and retired, and if I have the funds, that'd be something I'd love to do. Take my sons, or maybe at that point my grandkids, we're going to visit every major league ballpark and watch a baseball game. I think that'd be cool.
Jeremiah writes us and says, rode my Harley to Cincy to go to Riverbend to see, what happened to it? It disappeared. Def Leppard, Tesla opened.
Okay.
Rode his Harley to Cincy to see Def Leppard and Tesla open. I love that lineup. I love those bands.
Dude, anytime Def Leppard tours, it feels like it's with other bands that you want to see. Because last year they did the stadium tour here, and that was with Poison and Motley Crue and Joan Jett.
Yeah.
But Def Leppard, they always have somebody that's worth watching. Sometimes you get stuck with like a Molly Hatchet cover band while you're waiting for the main event to come on.
Kid Charlemagne writes us, Lexington, Kentucky to see the Stones, went to work the next day.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I had to go to work the next day after driving. It was like on a Wednesday night when we went to see Third Eye Blind in Chicago.
How much work got done?
Not much. I was kind of a slacker. Working in my dad's shop at the time.
Because I remember when you were working in this building, I was the promotions director, and you were doing the station in Terre Haute out of this building.
Yes.
You had went to Motley Crue the night before.
Yeah.
And I peeped into your studio. Hey, what's up, man? And it looks like somebody had beat the hell out of you.
The little room I was in broadcasting out of was probably reeked of alcohol as well.
More so than usual.
Oh, man.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
You believe these characters are weirdos? So let's
rock it! A few pieces of audio from Donald Trump's appearance on Sean Hannity last night. More subdued Trump. This wasn't rally Trump. I really liked what he had to say. You'll hear the clip when he asked him about the war in Ukraine. We'll start, though, with the indictment, a possible indictment, D.A. Alvin Bragg, as you call him, Fat Alvin,
is
filing campaign finance charges, possible charges relating to the Stormy Daniels payoff. And Hannity asked Trump, does this indictment, could it possibly help your campaign?
Well, if you listen to the fake news media, it helps. Because they're all saying it's a scam. Even people that don't like me are saying this is a terrible thing to do for our country. I don't know whether it helps or hurts. I can tell you, in my opinion, it's a new way of cheating on elections. It's called election interference. What they're doing is, if they can't win at the ballot box, because I'm leading everybody by a lot in the polls, for every Republican, frankly, and every Democrat by a lot, including Biden by a lot. And they can't beat you that way. They're going to do this kind of stuff.
Well, okay, there's a couple things to unpack there. Number one, in Iowa and New Hampshire, some of the early primaries for presidential candidates, it does show Ron DeSantis leading Donald Trump, but that's only with those two head-to-head. You get more people in the field, then maybe Donald Trump does have the lead. And at the beginning of that statement, it was kind of bizarre. If you listen to the fake news media, they're going to say I'm doing fine. So if they're the fake news media, are you not doing fine? I don't know. It seemed like it was a little weird. Ultimately, I think he does come off a little sympathetic in this, whether it's the Mar-a-Lago raid, whether it's what's happening with Fat Alvin here. It does look like they're out to get this dude because they simply don't like him.
They've been out to get him since he came down the escalator in 2015, from spying on his campaign to the Russia collusion, to the Mueller probe, to the DNC working with social media companies to squash the Hunter Biden laptop from hell stories before, right before the 2020 election. And now this kind of sham, I mean, talk about a sham January 6th hearings, sham impeachments, the sham litigation here involving the district attorney and the prosecutor in Manhattan. It never ends.
More coming.
Oh, yeah.
Mike Pence is going to have to testify for some January 6th stuff. Just because Liz Cheney and old crying Adam Kinzinger are no longer in Washington doesn't mean that the movie ends. They're going to bring Mike Pence in and have him speak under oath about January 6th and how Donald Trump handled things. So all of that's still going on. And I do think, though, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like there's a lot of people who said, all right, enough is enough. I'm not the biggest fan of Donald Trump, but what they're doing to this dude is horse crap. It's a weaponization of the Justice Department. And if they're going to do it to this guy, they'll probably do it to the next powerful Republican. So it has to end at some point. So I think that's why you're seeing a little uptick in the polls with Donald Trump.
Yeah, not only that, but it seems like the Democrats, like in 2016, they claimed the election was rigged. They claimed Russia was the reason that Donald Trump won the election. And then they turn around in 2020 and discredit and shame people who thought there were some questions surrounding the validity of the 2020 election.
The biggest election denier was Hakeem Jeffries.
Of course.
And he was named the minority leader of the House of Representatives recently. Here's a little bit more from that chat that Donald Trump had with Sean Hannity last night. This is in regards to the Russia-Ukraine war.
It would have never happened in a million years, and even the Democrats admit that. But if this thing isn't solved by the time we have the election, which is possible it won't be, and there's also possible we'll be in World War III with these idiots that are doing what they're doing. You could end up in a nuclear world war, which will make World War I and World War II look like patty cakes, okay?
Patty cakes.
Unbelievable, because we have people that don't know what they're doing. But if it's not solved, I will have it solved in 24 hours with Zelensky and with Putin.
24 hours, Nige.
Well, that's the kind of stuff I like to hear. Instead of, you know, on stage talking about horse face and DeSantis. That's really kind of the substance. If he gets elected, I mean, that he'll have it solved in 24 hours.
He claims.
That's
he also said he'd build the wall.
Of course, Biden said he'd cure cancer.
That's true. Politicians say a lot of crazy stuff when the rubber meets the road.
But I like that. I mean, I don't want any part of anything going on in Ukraine. And that's a big factor in who I'm going to be voting for the presidential election.
A little bit more from that chat last night. Here is the former president on the banking system here in America. And if he agreed with the bailout of Silicon Valley Bank.
I wouldn't have supported the bailout. The bank would have to get along by itself, and maybe they could have. What happened with the bank is interest rates went too high. And, you know, I had my own situation with Powell, and I beat the hell out of him. I was not a big fan of Powell. He was recommended by some people. I didn't like him. He's too interest rate happy. What you do is you get the oil prices down. That's bigger than interest rates, the only thing. And what happened is we took an oil and now we take an interest rates. Those banks failed because the interest rates were too high. They stupidly bought long-term treasuries.
10-year treasuries.
Well, they bought long-term, longer than that even. Mm. And they bought long-term and those treasuries got crushed because Powell keeps raising interest rates. But that's up to Biden.
So once they got done talking about some of the current events happening, they brought up the Mar-a-Lago raid. We mentioned it earlier, the Mar-a-Lago raid where the feds came in and they placed the papers on the ground.
Yeah, they staged a photo of the security or the classified documents, right?
Now, remind me, did that happen to Joe Biden's garage, Nige? Did they just walk up to Joe's garage, which was open, and spread documents out and take photos?
No.
The president noticed that, too.
The FBI was there. They showed them the room. I told them it was okay. Show them the room. I said you could show them the documents. You could do whatever you want. The FBI could have taken the documents if they would have asked. They didn't ask about that. The only thing they asked for was, could you put an extra lock?
Right.
It was under lock and key. This wasn't strewn all over the floor of a garage with a garage door that you can buy for $179 and you can cut it with the scissors.
Right.
This, and it was open all the time, by the way. You know, that door was open most of the time with the Corvette. This was a lock that we had a good, strong lock. They asked, could we put a second one? And then I don't know what the timing was. And then they come in and raid. We would have given them the stuff had they asked for it. But you know what it is? This is election interference. They're trying to make it look bad. Now, I think the raid on Mar-a-Lago did backfire badly on them. People are... I had people that weren't my supporters that are now supporters because of the raid on Mar-a-Lago.
And I think you're seeing more and more of that the more they investigate this guy. People who don't necessarily like him personally, but think this is some bull crap that's going on with the justice system in this country. So if Donald Trump isn't your cup of tea, or maybe Ron DeSantis isn't your cup of tea, there's rumors of a new name that could be jumping into the GOP race for president, Nige.
Pete Buttigieg.
Chris Christie.
That's even more laughable than Buttigieg.
Chris Christie putting out feelers for a 2024 run.
He's done so well in the past.
He was at this town hall last night at New Hampshire Institute of Politics. So this is kind of a frequent stop for those getting ready to make a run. And while he was speaking, Christie, of course, was blasting Donald Trump, said that you have to have somebody tough that's going to run against Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's trying to convince people that he's got the chops, he's got the skills, he has what it takes to go toe-to-toe with Donald Trump on a debate stage. You remember, I remember vaguely 2016, Chris Christie busting up Marco Rubio on the debate stage, really hindering his mojo and his momentum there in New Hampshire. And he kind of used that as saying, look what I did to Rubio. I could do the same thing to Trump.
So who's asking for this, though?
Exactly.
Who's asking for this? Because he said last night he's going to take the next 2 months to decide. Who's asking for this? Now, if you need a little reminder of what Chris Christie was like as a candidate, let's have some words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom with Chris Christie.
Your critics call you a hothead. Do you need anger management?
Shut up.
Words of wisdom with Chris Christie.
Shut up.
And if that's not enough for you, remember the time that he thought it'd be a good idea to go into his local radio station and take some calls? This was shortly after that situation where he closed a private beach and then he decided to go to it and hang out himself.
Mike in Montclair. What's up, Mike?
Governor, next time you want to sit on a beach that is closed to the entire world except you.
Yeah.
You put your fat ass in a car and go to one that's open to all your constituents.
Well, you know, not just interesting, Mike. You know what?
What's that, Gov?
Great moments in Chris Christie history.
Oh, it's classic.
It's not every day you get to call a former governor fat ass on the radio.
Hammer and Nigel presents
is.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yeah. Is this anything?
All right, let's rock and roll.
Hey, Mara, how do we play? Is this anything?
I'll run some stories by you. You break down all the information. You weigh out the pros and the cons, and you give us the verdict. Is the story anything or not?
Fair enough.
Is this anything? A Good Samaritan out of Oregon is getting praise after saving a grandmother from a house fire.
Oh, I saw this. Yeah.
He spotted the fire while taking a walk with his baby.
Yeah, his infant child with him.
He then got the child to safety and rescued Kai Brown from her burning house. The guy's name is Ronnie. Here he is talking about how it all went down.
Jumped out of the car and asked the neighbor to watch. The little guy went inside and found her bottom of the stairs, black all over her face from all the smoke. The upper level was completely black and dark, and lower level was pretty hazy as well. And she was sitting there, and just put my arms underneath her armpits and dragged her to the front door.
Yeah, that guy's a hero for sure. Love these stories. Love these feel-good stories, and especially the fact that this guy had his new baby with him. Stuck the baby with a stranger. Here, hold this. I got to go into a burning fire and save an old lady. That's pretty heroic. That's something we need more of. And if it wouldn't have been for him, who knows if the fire department would have got there in time to save that person. I don't know, man. Like, I'd like to think that I'd be able to do something like that. I'd you know, run into a burning building to save somebody, especially when I'm carrying my infant son or daughter. You wouldn't you?
I think I would, but man, honestly, I'm thinking about that. Like, the hard part, and maybe we're glossing over this, is just handing your child off to a stranger, because there's a lot of weird people in this world. Like, I would want to run into the building, but I don't trust this weirdo on the street to hold my baby while I do that.
Even bigger picture, this, I don't know what made me think of this, but I was getting on 65 South from 465 on the west side the other day, and that ramp that goes up, circles around, there was a guy on the side of the road, and he was trying to wave people down like he needed help or something like that. And, I was tempted to, I don't know if he needed a cell phone or obviously something was wrong. His car wouldn't start. He was trying to wave people down like I needed, but I didn't stop. I felt bad. I figured soon enough somebody's going to call the police or somebody's going to get him some help. You know what I mean? But like, right. You never know anymore. I mean, you see, I've read stories. I think it's happened here in Central Indy where somebody pulled over to help what they thought was a stranded motorist and they ended up robbing and killing the person, I think.
Right. And that really sucks. Those are the stories we remember, because there are people who just need a little help, roadside assistance on the side of the road sometimes. Have you ever in your life picked up like a strange hitchhiker or anything?
No, but like there's been times like I remember during right in the height of COVID, I just got done with the dentist office, and there's this gas station right now. You were allowed to go back to the dentist, and I went and got my teeth clean, but it was still the height of COVID, and I was getting some gas. This guy comes up to me and he's like, man, can I just get some gas? Can I borrow, you know, $20? I need to get to Fort Wayne. And I'm like, here, man, I'll fill your entire gas tank up for you. That's fine. So I did it. I went to shake his hand, and that was when you weren't allowed to shake people's hands. And this guy looked a little bit, you know, I don't want to say shady, but he looked rough. You know what I mean? And his car looked rough. And I shook his hand, and he goes, all right, I'm going to go back inside to get some hand sanitizer. Thanks.
Did you fall for the oldest trick in the book, you right. sucker. Now this guy's insulting you, calling you a germ-filled,
horrible exactly.
person.
Right. I do remember, there was another time at another gas station where this dude got out of his car with a screaming baby, just had a really pained, awful look on his face. And he asked me if, you know, I could have some money or know where I could get some baby formula. Because I'm staying at a friend's house. I'm locked out of the house. My baby's crying. I go, man, I'll drive with you to Walmart down the road to get you some formula.
Okay.
And about halfway there, he pulled up next to me. He goes, hey, man, thanks. My friend just got back to me. He opened the door.
Okay.
So, okay. I don't know.
Man,
he goes, hey, my friend got back to me. It's okay. I'm going to go get my wallet. He claimed his wallet was locked in his friend's house.
And then magically.
But the baby thing. And he had a really just distressed look on his face. I felt so bad for him.
It just feels like all of these things are scams, though. It really does. Like, I'm so cynical that I feel like he's using his baby as a prop.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he would have. The look on his face, though, was something different. Like, the guys, I fell for it. I didn't know the guys in the parking lots playing the violin and asking for money were scams.
Yeah.
There was one in next to Kroger there in Boone Village that I thought, man, that is so cool. I had Connor go up and give him my 11-year-old go and put a dollar in his thing, and I didn't know those were actually scams. They're not really playing the violin.
No.
It looks like they're playing the violin.
Yeah, it's total Milli Vanilli. They've got like music coming out of like another area.
Oh, wow. So yeah, that's about the extent of my, you know, helping out the stranger.
If anybody listening has a awesome hitchhiker experience, if you've ever picked up a hitchhiker and you've got a story, or somebody that was trying to pull a scam and you've got a story, I'd love to hear it. You know, I know we've got other things going on right now, but hit us up on social media. At Hammer and Nigel, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
But you know what? The thing is, Hammer, and back to the guy on the side of the road the other day I saw was trying to wave down somebody traffic for help. eventually somebody, like Hoosier Helpers is a thing where, and Matt Bear can maybe speak to this a little bit. They have cameras all over the place on the interstate because it happened to us one time. We broke down on the interstate right when we had our newborn, and we didn't have to call anybody. We didn't know what we were doing, and then the Hoosier Helper saw us on the traffic cam.
Right.
They saw us and pulled up behind us and was able to get us a tow.
And listen, if your car's ever screwed up, the experts in roadside assistance are AAA. I've got AAA membership.
Well, sure, yeah.
Now, obviously, we are partners with AAA, but I use that product.
I do, too. I use it again. My battery died. It was dead.
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 Battery is dead.
And they were at my house in 45 minutes to swipe it out.
Love AAA, and I love that new My Pit Crew feature they've got to where I can just sit there, and they'll bring the tire to me and do all the work.
The new tires, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to sit at a, you don't have to sit at a tire shop.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. Hammer's over there. My name is Nigel. The real estate market fascinates me. I know nothing about real estate or the housing market, but I do know that the market appears to be rebounding after a drop in the mortgage rates, surging in the month of February by 14.5%. So we figured we'd bring in an expert to tell us what's going on. Mark Dietl on the drivehubler.com online. Mark, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Guys, how you doing?
Really good, man. And I just want to, you know, full disclosure, you do advertise with this station, but when real estate news is making the rounds, we definitely want to go to you to figure out, you know, exactly what's going on. So the housing market is heating up after about a 12-month decline. What's going on?
Well, first of all, you said you don't know anything about the housing industry, but if you have, but if anybody who owns a house knows something about the housing industry.
Yep.
So basically what's going on right now is really interesting because it's very, we really reverted back to a really seasonal market. So any type of a surge we're seeing right now, this is a normal surge when we look at month over month stats in central Indiana, because again, we're much more of a seasonal pattern. A lot of people like to joke when the rates were down around 3 to 3.5%, you could sell a house when it was, you know, 0 degrees out. But right now we are getting the normal surge, and that's to be expected. And the rates right now, I would say buyers are pretty or quite sensitive when it comes to the rates. We had a little bit of a dip below 6%, probably in early February. They've creeped up. They creeped up in about, you know, about a 3-week period of time up over 7. And we're probably hovering right around that 7, high 6s, low 7s mark right now for a 30-year conventional when it comes to rates.
Wow. So I think people had it pretty good, or maybe even a little bit spoiled when those rates were down at 3%. Is 6, 7% the higher rates? Is that pretty much the standard or the norm when it comes to this? And the 3% was just sort of an aberration?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a lot of lenders, and actually a lot of just people who've been in the real estate for a long period of time. And there's a lot of people say we're never going to see those rates again.
Oh, wow.
Obviously, you know, you hate to say never. Never's a long time. Probably if you would have asked us that previously, we would have said we would never see those. So, yeah, I think the stat I saw is like 85% of everybody who has a mortgage, their rate is less than 5%, considering I think mine was 13 or 14% when I bought my first house in
Whoa.
The 80s. Below 5% is still really good. So I think it is probably a little bit of an aberration, just what happened with COVID and the pandemic and our you know, the Fed's reaction to that to try to, you know, stimulate the economy.
Mark Dietl is our guest here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. Mark, Jason Hammer here, and Nigel said it earlier. We're not going to sit here and act like we're experts on the housing market. This is why we bring you on. So for somebody listening right now that says, now, wait a minute, I hear all these stories about banks possibly being in trouble. I see, you know, the federal numbers going up with the interest rates. Why is now the time to buy a house? Like, why all of a sudden is this such a good time when everything else seems to be going to hell in a handbasket?
Well, when you look at just purely the supply and demand, and it's pretty much basic economics when it comes to the housing industry, there are more homes actually available in today's market than there have been a year ago. Now, the number of closings have slowed down. So the closed sales versus a year ago are down, but the actual amount of active inventory is up. And depending on your situation, when it comes to getting a loan, when you talk to your mortgage lender or you talk to your realtor who is working with a mortgage lender, there's different programs. You know, they call it 2-1 buy down, 3-1 buy down. There's different programs like that where you can get the sellers. They'll be motivated to help contribute dollars towards the buyer that can get those rates bought down. And in today's environment versus a year ago, 2 years ago, the buyers are in a position to have, you know, to negotiate a little bit better. Now, based on the statistics, we're still in a seller's market, but not nearly to the extreme where we were, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, when it was just crazy hot.
And that kind of leads to my next question. How long are homes typically here in Indy staying on the market?
The average days on market right now, if you look at average, now that's not the median, but the average right now for actually the month, I think it was the month of March is around, the month of February is like in the low 50s. And obviously that's quite a bit higher than it's been the last couple of years. But if you go back, if you go back to 2019, let's just say pre-pandemic, we're pretty much right in line for the number of days on market, average number of days on market for a home in the 50s as we were back in 2019. I think it dropped. I think it may have been the lowest early last year when the rates were still low, and it was half that. It was like 20 to 25.
Wow. What are the hot spots in Indy right now? Where are you selling the most?
Well, when you look at statistics, what we like to talk about is the number of months of inventory on hand. That that gives us an idea how active versus a seller's versus a buyer's market a particular area is. And I always talk, whenever I'm talking to people about real estate, I always say we're hyper local. In other words, you're going to hear stats nationally. You're going to have maybe hear stats statewide. So when you're talking to your realtor, always make sure you're asking about that particular area and maybe neighborhood price point. But actually, when you look at the number of months of inventory and when it was really, really white hot, we're talking about like 0.5, which is like a half a month of inventory. If there wasn't any other inventory that came into the market, that's how long we'd be out. It was down well below one across the 16-county area, which is central Indiana. But right now, they've creeped up over one. And when you look at the numbers, the county that has the lowest number of months of inventory on hand actually is Hamilton. It's kind of those donut, you know, the counties. We've had a shift and how people are looking about where they want to live, and they've moved out a little bit more in the suburban area, especially millennials. So Hamilton County is still really strong. Johnson County, Hendricks County, all those types of counties, you've seen more of a movement kind of out to the donut counties versus where we were maybe a year or two ago. And even before that, you know, when kind of the inner city areas, the little village type areas were a little bit more in trend.
Mark Deedle is our real estate expert joining us here on the Hammer and Nigel show. Mark, does the news cycle have an effect on the market? Like if you're watching the news and you live in a school district where you hear there may be a referendum coming on the ballot next year, could raise people's taxes, or it's an area that's seen an uptick in crime and things like that. Do those type of things move the needle?
Well, I think they. I think different events within local communities and local areas can have an impact on demand. So, if you just go back and look at pure demand, supply and demand, like I've said, any type of an event that's going to maybe increase that demand as far as buyers seeing an area that's desirable, then that's going to obviously create more demand with the inventory where it is. It could mean there's more buyers bidding on those particular homes. So if you just kind of think through that thought process, that will help, you know, help you kind of guide you as you go through and look at different areas that you may be interested in as a buyer or even as a seller.
Last thing before we let you go, Mark Deedle, real estate agent here on the Hammer and Nigel show. Have home prices, you may have touched on this a little bit earlier, but have home prices, have those been coming down to a more reasonable number? I know at one point in my neighborhood, homes were going for twice what they were, and I'm like, boy, I never paid that much 10 years ago when I got in this neighborhood. Have they become any more reasonable?
Yeah, let's just talk about price really quick. June of 2022 was kind of a high point when you look at a maybe even an 8-year graph of showing the chart. I think the median sales price in central Indiana on a single-family home was around $300,000. Now, that's come down to February at around maybe, say, 275, 280 in that range. But when we look at February of this year versus February of last year, we still have an increase month over month as it relates to the median sales price. So that's a pretty interesting number.
Yep.
We have been experiencing declines, though, from a standpoint of month to month, and that's normal. We'll do that from June of every year, probably to about January, and then that median sales price will go back up when you compare it month to month, because we kind of follow that seasonal transaction. But as it relates to year over year, we're still strong. Obviously, different pockets are impacting different, you know, get different impacted differently based on what's going on. But values are still strong. And when you really look at all the numbers and all the statistics, I'm still, you know, very optimistic on the value of single family homes as it relates to people buying a home and living in it, or even as it relates to investing in it.
That's our guy right there. Mark Dietl guarantees your home sold or he'll buy it. MarkDietl.com is the website. And you can get a hold of him at 317-755-4232. Mark, we always appreciate your input. Thank you.
Hey, I appreciate it, guys, and call me anytime. Thanks so much.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Allison, can I have a moment of personal privilege here before we transition into the next break here? Nigel, we got our ratings back. And once again, thanks to the people that listen to this program, we are number one, been number one for a long time, but it never gets old. Number one in all the key demos, 6+, 25-54 band, 35+. Like, we can really go into the weeds here.
Big numbers.
But the fact of the matter is, it's huge numbers. So thank you to all the people who make this little pony show that Big Nige and I do every afternoon part of your routine, part of your lives. It doesn't go unnoticed. Like, when we started this thing years ago, we didn't know what the sky would be, you know, would be off the air in a month or what would happen. But man, we've been number one for like 5 years, and it's because of you folks that keep coming back every damn day. So thank you very much from the bottom of our hearts here at the Hammer and Nigel Show.
And here's why we're number one, because we talk about studies like this. There are five smells around the house Americans hate the most, according to this study. In popular science, they looked at Google Trends to figure out the five smells around the house that Americans hate the most. They are when a skunk sprayed outside, you could smell it in your house.
Oh, yeah.
Mildew on your clothes.
Ooh.
Cigarette smoke on your clothes. That's a big one. Gasoline on your shoes and dog pee on the carpet. Those are the top five. I can't believe walking in the bathroom after your spouse pooping isn't one of them.
Or anybody, for that matter. Like, there's a unisex bathroom right across from us, and I don't know who it is in the newsroom. Somebody needs to visit a doctor. I don't know if it's Donnie Burgess. I don't know if it's John Herrick. Maybe it's Sasha. I don't know. Somebody needs to see a doctor because that thing is awful. Allison's laughing because she knows that I'm right. You've just walked by that thing before.
Yeah, you're painfully right. Painfully right.
Which brings us to great moments and what is that smell history here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. This is when the former mayor of Baltimore, Catherine Pugh, was doing a walking tour of her fine city.
What the hell? We should just take all this down. Ooh, you can smell the rats. Ooh, Jesus.
Ooh, you can smell the rats. Ooh, Jesus.
She's still in jail.
I believe she's still in jail. She had a little Ponzi scheme for her horrible book.
Yeah.
Great moments in What Is That Smell history, the reaction to the Sex Panther cologne.
Oh my God. What is that smell? Oh.
That's a smell of desire, m'lady.
God, no, it smells like a used diaper filled with Indian food. Oh, excuse me.
You know, desire smells like that to some people.
What is that? It smells like a turd covered in burnt hair.
Great moments in What Is That Smell history.
Smells like Bigfoot's bleep.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hammer and Nigel.
You believe these characters are weirdos?
So let's rock it!
The body cam footage from the Nashville PD during the school shooting yesterday is very intense. The police were relentless. You watch this thing, you hear the words go and move. over and over again, shouted a bunch of times. The response, again, was just massive. I often wonder, and I hate thinking about, if there would have been a school resource officer there, could more lives have been saved? That's not taking anything away from the Nashville PD, who responded unbelievable to this horrific situation. Even the school staff came out to brief the police, gave them useful information, Hammer. Somebody, you know, they had already initiated a lockdown in the school. From the clip we're about to play, you're going to hear sirens. It's pretty terrifying audio. In terms of what the sirens that are blaring in the background during the shooting, you can hear shooting going on. I think at the end, when the police officers engaged the school shooter, she was shooting out a window, I believe, trying to hit other officers after she had killed six people.
And the officers that are getting credit for being the one to take down the shooter, Nashville police officers Michael Collazo and Officer Rex Engelbert. And earlier today, we shared the full six-minute police video on our Twitter, at Hammer and Nigel. Nigel said it best. It's pretty intense. If you want to watch the full 6 minutes, you get about 3 minutes of body cam from Officer Collazo and 3 minutes of body cam from Officer Engelbert. This is just a little bit of that audio. This is when one of the officers was running through the hallways toward the shooter, and you can hear the suspect, the shooter, firing shots at officers, and they're ultimately able to take the shooter down.
Shots fired, shots fired, shots fired, move. Right, right, right. Push the LPV up. Push the LPV up. Go right. Reloading. Move, move. Watch out, watch out. Move. Stop moving. Stop moving. Watch left, watch left. Suspect down, suspect down. Hey, hold the air.
All the things that did not happen in Uvalde happened here in Nashville.
Same with Parkland.
This was the way it was taught. This was the way it's supposed to work from an officer standpoint. These guys, and again, Officer Collazo and Officer Engelbert are getting the credit for the kill shots, if you will. But it wasn't just them. It was team efforts, multiple teams going through this school, going door by door, checking things. And then when they hear shooting taking place on the second floor, that's when everybody runs up. And the part that it just gives me chills watching, Nigel, is in this video, they're running toward the shooter. Now, they've got everything blurred out that's gory, but you see a young victim on the floor at one point.
Yeah, I mean, look, the victims were, 9 years old. My daughter just turned 9. I can't even imagine the grief and the despair the families, the victims are going through right now. And my fear and what I'm seeing unfolding on Twitter right now is that there is a segment of the media, the segment of Twitter and social media that is making the shooter out to be a victim.
We saw that relatively quickly yesterday, and it's sickening. It's absolutely disgusting.
Like ABC's Terry Moran. This idiot. This happened, this was a day ago. This is 24 hours ago. Actually tying the Nashville school shooting to Tennessee's recently passed legislation banning the hormonization and mutilation of minors. They tied it to that.
The police chief also said that the shooter has been identified as 28-year-old female. Said she's a former student of the school and confirmed that Audrey Hill identified herself as a transgender person. State of Tennessee earlier this month passed and the governor signed a bill that banned transgender medical care for minors, as well as a law that prohibited adult entertainment, including male and female impersonators, after a series of drag show controversies in that state.
They are making this person out to be the victim.
And it's not just ABC and Terry Moran. In a now deleted tweet, USA Today apologized to their readers because they said that the Nashville police misgendered the transgender school shooter. So let me say that again. USA Today apologized on behalf of the child murderer that ran into that school and killed people, because in the initial press conference that the Nashville PD did, they misgendered this lunatic. Now, that tweet has since been deleted. I understand why.
A contributing reporter for the New York Times, NBC News, The Guardian, Washington Post, The Atlantic, Benjamin Ryan, quote, NBC is ID'd the Nashville school shooter as, gives her name, 28, who identifies as transgender and had no previous criminal record. Nashville is home to the Daily Wire, a hub of anti-trans activity by Matt Walsh, Ben Shapiro, Michael Knowles.
Here's Newsweek. Not to be outdone, Newsweek. This was the headline. Tennessee Republicans' ban on drag shows criticized after mass shooting. So,
shut up.
This is the most disgusting display from the media I've seen in a long time. And keep in mind, I've got the bar set pretty low for the national media here.
I mean, they're blaming this tragedy on transphobia without knowing any real details.
USA Today apologized on behalf of a child murderer. They apologized.
Oh, but they deleted the tweet, so it never happened.
Right? Unbelievable. I mean, it just, I'm so furious about some of this stuff. It makes me sick to my stomach. Unreal.
Go ahead, man.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show. Hammer's right over there. My name is Nigel, friend of the show, Greg Price. First of all, explain who Greg Price is.
Greg Price is a political consultant, commentator, has a huge Twitter following, gets retweeted by like Don Jr., people like that all the time.
So what did he do? What's he posting about TikTok here?
So there's a lot of chatter about the social media app TikTok. The fact that it's owned by this company named ByteDance, which is very subservient to the Chinese Communist Party. Well, last week there were some hearings in Washington, and the CEO of TikTok came in, spoke to lawmakers, and we've been told that it's been a bipartisan deal. Republicans and Democrats trying to work together to figure out a way to make TikTok work or to ban it. But we're being told that it's both sides working together.
And why do we want to ban it? Because it's, you know, it's data harvesting. It's spying us. Some would say Chinese mind control.
Right.
So a lot of stuff going on with TikTok.
But the question was, why are the Democrats so eager to work with Republicans? Now we finally have an answer, because the Ban TikTok bill, it's actually called the Restrict Act. Greg Price posted some screenshots of this on his Twitter account. And what this is, it has nothing to do with you being concerned if your information is being reviewed by the Chinese Communist Party. What this bill really is a Trojan horse for online censorship. So when Elon Musk bought Twitter and exposed all the shady stuff going on behind closed doors there, that freaked a lot of Democrats out, because Twitter was their way of suppressing a lot of information.
Yeah.
Well, now with this TikTok ban, if you want to call it this, the Restrict Act, what this is an act that gives the government the ability to go after anything they deem as a national security risk on social media. So let's just say Donald Trump comes out and says, I've got a plan to end the war in Ukraine in 24 hours. In theory, if this bill passes, the government, Joe Biden's government, could say, no, you're posing a threat to security, so we're going to remove that from social media. All this is trying to get social media back the way that it was before Elon Musk exposed everything.
I see what Greg Price is trying to say there. Plus, I don't think Democrats really want to get rid. I mean, look at the progressive left-wing socialist sweetheart AOC. She was actually on TikTok talking about how she doesn't think they should get rid of TikTok because it doesn't feel right.
It doesn't feel right.
That's a typical, typical AOC. When in reality, she has a huge following on that platform. And Democrats, especially progressives, don't want to get rid of that outreach.
Here's a little bit more from the post from Greg Price. This gives the executive branch total control to police the internet. The bill to ban TikTok is absolutely terrifying. It gives the government the ability to go after anyone they deem as a national security risk, at which point they can access everything from their computer to video games to everything.
That's an interesting aspect of this bill that has been brought to light that I don't think a lot of people are being have paid attention to.
Read the bill. It's one thing to get behind a movement, but read the bill, because these shady people, Republicans and Democrats, will always try to sneak some crap in there. And if you don't pay attention to it, you're going to pay the price. So this is a story from Variety, Nige. We've been talking about how CNN's ratings are in the absolute toilet. They're getting beaten prime time by, like, you know, the Home and Garden Channel and things
like that.
They've
never been worse. The ratings have never been worse than they are right now.
Variety is reporting that journalist Gayle King and Charles Barkley may be nearing a deal to host a 9 p.m. nightly show on CNN.
Did you put the word journalist in quotes when you said Gayle King? I'm sorry. Okay, well, you've got my intention with Charles Barkley. I don't care about Gayle King whatsoever.
My concern here is that if they're going to pay Barkley a lot of money to be competing against Sean Hannity, to be competing against some of these other programs, are they going to try to water him down? Or is it going to be freewheeling, first thing that pops in your head, Charles Barkley? Because that's what he does on the NBA on TNT.
Do you think this is really attractive to him at all? He's got a great gig with TNT. It's easy. It's no pressure. He gets away and says whatever he wants.
But he does like to talk about this kind of stuff, though. But will CNN let Charles Barkley be himself?
They better do something.
Because a lot of times the Barkley point of view doesn't necessarily coincide with what CNN is pushing down your throats, like the defund the police movement.
I hear these fools on TV talking about defund the police and things like that. We need police reform and prison reform and things like that. Who are black people supposed to call? Ghostbusters? When we have crime in our neighborhoods, we need police reform. So we need to stop that defund or abolish the cops crap.
So he's all in favor of reform, but let's stop with the defund the police kind of nonsense, which if you listen to Don Lemon, the previous host of that 9 p.m. slot, he was all about everything. This is Charles Barkley previously on those taking a knee for the national anthem.
And my thing is, listen, the national anthem means different things to different people. I'm glad these guys are all unified. But if people don't kneel, they're not a bad person. I want to make that perfectly clear. I'm glad they had unity, but if we have a guy who doesn't want to kneel because the anthem means something to him, he should not be vilified.
How is the network that employs Bakari Sellers going to respond when Charles Barkley says that?
Jim Acosta.
Right. And my favorite thing, with CNN being headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia, will Charles Barkley continue to make fun of the ugly women in Georgia?
Contavious Caldwell-Pope, where do you go to school?
Georgia.
Yes, indeed. Had 29 on the night.
Only school in the world. They named their mascot after the women down there.
Oh, that's so totally uncalled.
The Georgia Bulldogs, and that's Charles Barkley. So it will be interesting to see if they partner those up and if they let him be Chuck. Curious about that.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening. I just don't see, it doesn't make sense to me, really, that Charles Barkley would do something like that. But you're right, he likes to talk about that stuff.
Nige, you're a rock doc kind of guy. You watch a lot of rock documentaries.
Love them, yeah, sure.
You told me about the Tom Petty one that you watched, and it was long.
Yeah, it was a real long one. That's a really good one. The Eagles is great, Metallica, Rush. I mean, there's tons of them out there, yeah.
So Netflix is now working on a new film about Kiss.
Now,
remember a couple years ago, Netflix did that Motley Crue movie, The Dirt. and that was based off of the book.
Yeah.
But the movie itself was okay.
It was just okay. It was just all right for me. It was outrageous is what it was. There was especially that opening scene.
Right.
Good Lord.
There's a new movie trailer out about this, and it sounds like the folks at Netflix really want to temper your expectations for this Kiss movie.
Coming soon to Netflix.
Hi, I'm Gene Simmons.
You wanted the best, you got the best. Kiss, the movie.
Yeah.
But due to Joe Biden's inflation, Joe Biden's economy, and Joe Biden's horrible supply chain, we've had to make a few cuts in the budget. So get ready to rock and roll all night and party every day with Peter Criss, being played by Carrot Top.
Well, it's hardly just a skull. I put it on my head, and it's a skull cap!
Ace Frehley, being played by the guy that did the voice for Alf.
You could see Elvis in one of the crowd scenes in Gandhi.
Paul Stanley, played by Gary Busey.
I can go to your mom and start a small fire in her panties.
And Gene Simmons, played by Richard Simmons.
Hey, I want to dance with somebody.
Kiss, the movie, coming soon to Netflix.
I think they want to temper the expectations just a little bit.
You're listening to the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Pretty boy. Tony.
It's Tuesday with Tony Katz on the Hammer and Nigel Show.
Don't want to keep Tony waiting.
Hammer's over there. My name is Nigel, hooking up live with Tony Katz for Tuesdays with Tony. A horrific shooting at a school in Nashville. The community is devastated, Tony, and I could see this playing out. You know, the left, I've seen this movie before. The left calls for stricter gun control laws. I think personally school security and more attention to mental health is the issue. But I thought your point this morning on your show about this being a societal issue really resonated. We are broken as a society, aren't we?
That's my argument, that I break it down to one of two things, and I'm not saying that there isn't a third. I'm listening. I'm all ears. There is something that is missing from society that needs to be reintroduced, or there is something in society that needs to be extricated. You cannot have all of these things and make a claim that the problem is the gun allows it to happen. Their argument is, well, if you didn't have the gun, less people would be dead. And my argument is, if they didn't have the gun and they wanted to hurt people, why wouldn't they find other ways to hurt people? And if the argument now is, well, two people over six people, that's better, then my argument comes back as, then why can't I have a gun to stop the mass shooter? Can you imagine what would have happened if this person, this woman who claims to be a man, had been confronted by five people who were armed? They wouldn't have been able to get away with this. So no matter how you want to move that argument about safety, it doesn't actually solve a problem. Getting rid of guns doesn't actually solve the problem. And if you want to argue that we have more gun deaths than a place like the UK or somewhere else, I won't disagree with you on data. I'll disagree with you on reasons why. And the very differences in culture and the other things that they have given up and what we have done to our own culture, that's the hard subject. And these cowards, and I did refer to them as cowards, Nigel, and I want to now take the moment to double down on that. The people who won't talk about what is wrong with society, what we have done to ourselves, and discuss ways to fix this, they are cowards, and I want nothing to do with them. I want to talk about people. I want to talk to people who want to actually do something.
Tony, if we're going to have the discussion about society being broken, and I agree 100% with you, does the media fall into this? Because as soon as a situation like this happens, we already know what's going to happen. Certain media outlets are going to blame the gun. Or in yesterday's case, they're going to blame the Tennessee legislature for basically passing laws that say children can't get transgender surgeries and things like that. Other sides are going to have different angles to it. Is the media culpable in what has become a broken society?
How does one properly answer that? Because I can say both yes and no. But you bring up an interesting point about the people who say, well, you didn't allow these people to have surgeries, and therefore you made them feel threatened. Well, on social media, I can show you people who are talking about the state of Indiana with SB 480. If Holcomb signs it, and he should, it's going to be trans genocide. No, it's not. No, it's not. I mean, that is an absolute lie. But if you support those kinds of things, push those kinds of things, having the ACLU of Indiana even remotely connecting to anything like that, you might get people to believe that they're in a war for their existence, and the only answer is to kill the enemy, hurt the enemy, harm the enemy. We don't yet have, at least I haven't seen yet, anything about the manifesto of this woman in Nashville, so I'm not going to make any assumption to her motivation. Right? She texts a friend she's going to kill herself, and she decides she's going to take six people with her, including 3 9-year-olds. I have tons of questions that we don't have the answer for yet. Is the media culpable? Well, the answer there is, I would rather ask the question, why doesn't the media ask more questions?
Yes.
When you have local media, you know, you guys had a gun guy on, Guy Relford, talking about how they completely got the story of constitutional carry wrong there on Fox 59. You have Wish TV that absolutely got the story wrong regarding Michael Knowles' visit to Purdue and speaking there, where you had a reporter saying that Michael Knowles wants to eradicate, quote unquote, LGBTQ plus people. When he did have a conversation about eradicating transgenderism as this subject in America, provocative language, but it's not about eradicating people who are gay. That never got said, and the reporter has never changed a thing. Then you have RTV, which went about writing a story about, oh, look at Indiana's Don't Say Gay bill. I brought it up. I think you guys may have discussed it as well. It got so much heat, they changed the headline, but didn't change the story and still have the story wrong. So the answer is, I don't blame media, because I don't think journalists are the issue. I think the issue is we don't have enough journalists. We have propagandists and narrative seekers, and that's a real problem.
One more question, and then we'll move on. Does the transgender aspect in this case, this specific shooting, have a place in the discussion, or is it relevant at all?
Only when we, if you had told me there was no manifesto, and God, do I hate that word.
Yeah.
If you told me there was no message that was left, then I wouldn't be able to. I don't think there's a data point there that I could put to it. Somebody might put to it a mental illness conversation regarding the fact of gender dysphoria, etc., as laid out by the DSM-5, the statistical manual of diagnoses in the American Psychiatric Association. But when you tell me there's one, well, I'm not going to pontificate. I'm not going to assume. I'll read it. When you tell me there were maps and layouts of the schools, well, then you at least signal that this was purposeful, but you haven't yet let me know purpose. I'll wait for that reporting.
If there's any, and again, I hate even using this term because there's nothing positive about this story, but if there's anything positive at all for me, Tony, it was watching the body cam video of the Nashville Police Department everything right. Because knowing what we knew about Uvalde, Texas, watching these officers bust down the windows, get into the school, run into danger, hearing gunshots, running into danger. If there's any sort of silver lining on this story, I think a hat tip and a cold beer have to go to the Nashville Police Department.
I discussed that on the show today, and we should be a little more base than that. It's not that they did everything right. It's that they actually went in. They didn't go in Uvalde. They didn't go in at Parkland. They said they were afraid of the gun at Uvalde. And these guys, they didn't have, take a look at that body cam video, which is in many ways frightening. They didn't have gear. They didn't have shields or anything. Some of them had long rifles, whatever they were carrying. Some of them only had pistols. And they went room to room to room to room. And they moved expeditiously. Man, they moved with speed. They moved with precision, and then they handled the business. They didn't wait, and that's where the respect comes in.
Tuesdays with Tony Katz here on the Hammer and Nigel Show. Just a couple minutes left. Switch gears here to that Trump rally in Waco over the weekend. He still brings a crowd out for sure. I did think it was interesting. One specific aspect of that rally, it was when Trump, I don't know if you noticed it or not, he started railing on DeSantis, the governor of Florida. I think the response from the crowd was somewhat muted. And he had to go a different direction. Is attacking DeSantis the way Trump has been doing, is that, in your assessment, a positive part of his campaign? Is he going to bring in any new Trump voters doing what he's doing right now?
I think attacking DeSantis is weak, and he looks ridiculous, sad, and pathetic, but not as pathetic as his supporters. When he sits down with Sean Hannity... You know, I did a whole breakdown of this today. In that interview, talking about Ukraine and how he's going to handle Ukraine, how he's going to bring Russia to the table. He's going to have peace in 24 hours. The style in which he does that, in his earnestness, that connects.
Yes.
I mean, don't deny it. He connects. And by the way, he brought 15,000 people out to Waco. The guy has got himself a base. Let's be perfectly clear. But he doesn't win when he goes after DeSantis. He's going after DeSantis because DeSantis isn't in the race yet, and DeSantis won't hit back. It's easy, low-hanging fruit. And some people think that this is a reason for DeSantis to get in now because you're letting this guy paint you and you're not fighting back. I'm not so much sure I'm a believer in that concept. It is only April. I think you've got time to go and let Trump continue to punch himself in the face. I just don't think you have to jump in. But there are moments where Trump is, there's a reason you voted for him, and there's a moment where Trump is, oh, just shut it.
Less than a minute left here, TK. What's a better path for Donald Trump? Trying to get some of the DeSantis people in his corner, or some of those Joe Biden voters that went against him last time and then they realize what a blank show things have been the last couple of years and try to steal some of those Biden voters back?
I would say it's stealing some of those Biden voters back because I believe that you will get the DeSantis voter. The person who wants DeSantis and ends up with Trump will most probably vote for Trump because they have no choice. I don't believe that's true about the Trump voter. I've said that before. The only Trumper and the never Trumper share way too much in common, and it's totally unattractive. Those Biden people... People definitely voted for Biden because they're like, you know what? I'm going to vote for him. I'm not going to vote for Trump. It's too much crazy. I don't want any more crazy. And then they've been subjected to 2 years of totally crazy. And they're like, I don't want this. I want jobs. I want low interest rates. And I want to be protected at the border. I'm bringing Trump back. So you have more of a chance there. But not when you say if I'm indicted, there'll be death and destruction. You don't win any people over that way.
What's coming up on your big shows tomorrow?
Well, we're going to see if we get any updates on what happened in Nashville there. We're going to look for that. And Pence has been ordered to testify in the probe regarding Trump in 2020. So I'm very curious how he is going to go about fighting this. Is he going to make a claim that in his role as president of the Senate, he can't actually be ordered to testify? That's a big question, whether or not he's going to move down that road or maybe some other roads. And so I'll have that.
At Tony Katz on social media, Facebook, Tony Katz Radio. TK, thank you.
Always, baby.
It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.
All right. All right.
I love this story about Darius Rucker, Hammer. Yeah, former lead singer, or I guess I should say current lead singer of Hootie and the Blowfish. They haven't broken up. They still tour, but he also has a successful solo country career.
Some would call him Hootie.
Yeah, right. He's the Hootie and the Blowfish. A common mistake, I think, made by a lot of fans back in the day. But Darius Rucker is a big golfer, and he's buddies with Tiger Woods. And he says Tiger always beats him at golf, of course.
Well, he should.
And even worse... Tiger Woods trash talks him while doing it.
He was talking trash once. He was beating my brains out. And I said, man, I can't believe you're talking trash to me. He was like, of course I am. I was like, you're number one in the world. I'm number 7,612,000. And you're talking trash to me.
A little more respect for Tiger Woods, and he actually talks trash and still is taking the game seriously, even with when he's golfing with his buddies.
You play to win the game.
Dude, I talk Herb trash Edwards. Every time I'm on the golf course. Whoever I'm golfing with, I talk trash. And of course the best in the world is going to talk trash to you. It's just like, you know, the same thing with Michael Jordan. He does not let up. He's a competitor.
Right.
It doesn't matter if it's golf or if it's gambling or if it's basketball, you're going to get the 110%.
You've seen the videos of the family game nights at the Hammer House.
Oh, yeah, right.
We take it pretty competitively. We take it seriously. Table gets flipped over from time to time. Sure.
Real quick, I wanted to play this before we get out of here. We went kind of long with Tony Katz. And first of all, I want to say we love our friends at Wish TV over there. Stephanie Mead and Phil Sanchez and Marcus Bailey, Tara Hastings, Cody Adams, everybody. But somebody put together this montage of what you would call unforgiving moments from TV and weather people. These aren't from Wish TV, but this montage is pretty funny. Mispronunciations, a weather person excited it's heating up, and a hard news closer. Check this out.
DD Mega Doodoo. I'm sorry.
What?
Mangoodoo. Here's some other great town names. Lititz.
Oh, it's Lititz.
Lititz.
Let's get excited about that 69. I mean, yeah. That's pretty good this time of year, isn't it? I know you're excited about the wind, but I want that 69.
Over the last 2 years, hundreds have landed in the Summit County Medical Examiner's office.
My brother used to break in our house and steal the TV.
But now he's dead.
Oh, good Lord.
You know, a montage right there of interesting moments on live television news. It's the Hammer and Nigel Show.